Okay, so we don't have an opening today because, yet again, our basement flooded.
Yeah, like every season, our basement floods. Just like how the Nile floods over to fertilize its lands, so that in the coming year, the land is rich in nutrients to grow another sturdy crop of board games.
We get a whole new crop of board games?
I suppose, because last year our basement flooded, and then bam, our board game collection grew. So the only plausible explanation is that our basement grows board games.
Oh, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
We'll keep you up to date with any further developments.
Mm-hmm.
Jazz is out. I'm Jaina.
And I'm Sharon.
And together, we're Jazz's Begantsy.
Moving you from antsy to gantsy.
And today...
Today we're talking about something influential.
We're here to influence... No, we're not here to influence you. We're talking about games that have influenced the general population.
Okay.
Wow.
We were building up something and then you just...
I don't know what we were building.
I thought you were gonna... No. Talk about, like, and today we're going to talk about some games that have changed the landscape of modern gaming. Something like that.
Good, thank you. You did it for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you were going to, and then I was going to then jump in and say that, huh, modern gaming, like, define modern gaming.
And I was going to say, like, well, like, don't at me. Chess is not on this list. I get it. Modern gaming, I'm talking like Euro gaming,
mm-hmm.
So like the mid-90s, 90s and beyond.
Right, and then I was going to come in and say that, oh, mid-90s, well, that's such a millennial answer. Don't you know we're trying to also attract the Gen Zs, maybe the Gen Alphas?
Well, you got to wait, like we're getting, I'm going to start with like the earliest release and move forwards.
Okay, all right, like let's go back to...
We're in the modern age of board gaming.
Ye old 1990s. Okay. Cue music, like some form of like flashback music, right here.
I'll find some.
Okay.
So, okay, you know what? All right. I am going to start with Magic the Gathering.
Oh, okay.
Now, neither of us have played it.
Okay.
But... I am going to say that this, I think that it came out before the next game I'm going to talk about, would be my guess. I'm sure of it, actually.
You're and gutsy to just bring Magic the Gathering to what you just recently declared as an influential thing to modern
Okay, you're right. You're right. But here's why I think it needs to be the base. Like, this is the pillar.
All right.
Because... All right. I, from what I've heard and what I've read and what I've seen, I don't think most board game stores would survive without Magic the Gathering.
Oh, that's fair.
Even you look at like our go-to, like the biggest game store in our area, Mission Fun and Games, they survive on, like they have a whole bunch of, not just Magic, but you know, various collectible card games.
Right.
Because you get that continuous, people are coming in, they got to buy the new stuff, the new cards, the new packs.
The Pokemon cards. Okay. Yeah.
Even all right. Living card games, okay. Everything that's branched off.
So it's influential because it kept
the outposts. It allowed game stores to flourish.
Okay. Fair.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So the next game is going to come as no surprise. It has to be Catan.
Yes.
Settlers of Catan.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, so this is you're setting the stage. This is essentially the primordial soup of modern gaming.
Yeah, because I feel, and even to this day, Catan is, I think, the first and potentially only Euro-style game that a lot of people will ever play. But it opened everyone's eyes to what a board game could be. I think it's developed, you know, fan clubs and huge following, like very few other games.
Yeah, because if you're thinking about it, if all you've known in your life is Monopoly or Sorry or Clue, and then something like Catan comes along, like, I could see that being completely mind-blowing.
Well, and I think a lot of people that only have heard, like, only know of Monopoly and Sorry and Clue,
uh-huh.
the other game they will at least know of, even if they haven't played it, is Catan.
That's true.
Like, that was us it in is, university.
It is really, truly the modern classic.
And it's brought so many people into the hobby and keeps doing it.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah, and it is really a fun game.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great game.
Like, I don't think we would have the amount of games and the creativity in games like that we have now without Catan, because we wouldn't have the people buying them.
Yeah, and I
think the market just wouldn't be as big.
And I think it forced people to think about board games, players and game designers alike, to think of board games in really different ways. And so you're right. No, I agree.
Okay, because, yeah, I know when I initially, you know, brought up this topic and I said Catan, you were like, ugh.
Yeah, because Catan is so Catan. But, you know, that's just me being an ingrate, not realizing how much the game actually contributed to the hobby and how much audience it was able to capture and how much it fueled innovation and just a complete paradigm shift about what gaming can be and what it looks like. And it doesn't have to be always a dice rolling thing. There could be truly a strategic sort of themed but strategic game.
And I'd be interested too. I feel like a lot of board game stores, I bet Catan is still up there with their top sellers.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I could see it at least. Especially because they come out with new expansions and new, or just new base Catans, Starfarers and Star Trek and...
Yeah, and it's probably one of those games where even if you're, and for us, right? Because we're like, okay, we didn't, Catan wasn't our,
no.
What's the word?
Our intro, our gateway game?
Our gateway game. Catan wasn't our gateway game. I don't know why it wasn't.
I think it would have been. I remember when we were in university, we wanted to play Catan. We kept like trying to find someone who had Catan that was willing to teach us, and it just kept never happening. What was silly is there was three of us living together. We could have gone and bought it ourselves and been playing.
That was also before you realized how much you loved learning rules and teaching games. So it probably felt daunting to to do it.
That's true.
But it would have been actually completely doable. Mm-hmm. But what I was going to say, it's one of those like classics that even for us, even though that wasn't our gateway game, and we had hundreds of games in our collection, and we've played more like, I don't know, more than hundreds of games, we still wanted to play it, even though we managed to not play it for the longest time.
It just feels like something you have to play.
And when we played it, it was like, huh, this is a good game, even though a lot of people are like, well, these games are more than Catan, blah, blah, blah. But it's truly, especially for its time, it was such a great game.
And I think especially still for new players, like,
yeah.
You want that interaction.
Yeah.
Like, all that negotiation, like, if you have friends that thrive on that, I mean, sure, maybe you can do better than Catan, but still, I think it's, and because people have heard of it, they're willing to give it a try.
Right.
Right. Okay. So that is Catan. And if you didn't know, I think I might have told you this, that the designer recently died months ago.
I know.
But you know what? I think his games will still be, especially Catan, will still be talked about for decades.
I think that's a pretty amazing legacy that, you know, your game was able to make that seismic shift in a hobby that now has captured the hearts of millions of people around the world.
Yeah.
It's something, yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Pretty remarkable.
Okay. My next most influential game, and here's the thing. I might be wrong about this. We were so excited to start recording that I didn't actually do any research. But from coming into this hobby, like more in the mid to late teens, from what I've seen, I think the next big game that kind of changed the landscape of what a game could be was, and captured the heart of many people, was Dominion. Dominion came out in 2008, I'm pretty sure.
I can't believe it's been, like, it's that recent. It feels like a really old game.
Yeah. Well, yeah, fair enough.
It felt like a 90s game.
Oh, maybe. It has the 90s art.
Yeah, maybe that's why.
But Dominion was the first ever deck builder. And now again, I haven't done a bunch of research. I know there were a lot of great games that came out, you know, or, you know, a lot of respected games that came out in the 2000s. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Dominion took something that everyone's familiar with, like a card game. Mm-hmm. Like you're sitting down with your family to play cards, mm-hmm. or friends to play cards. Like there's thousands of card games in existence. But Dominion took quite literally a card game. On the base, there's not much else other than cards. And turned it into something just so different and so unique that hasn't been seen before. And I feel like that was the jumping off point for this huge, you know, leaps of creativity. Like without Dominion, we wouldn't have like a Lost Ruins of Arnak is a current super popular, you know, twist on deck building. Mm-hmm. Aeon's End was, you know, a little bit older, but still a great deck building game. Do an Imperium we wouldn't have without Dominion, potentially.
It is a game that's just, again, very elegant. In terms of how simple it was, mm-hmm. right? It's like, yeah, you have a bunch of cards in the market, and you buy it, and you build a deck, and then you shuffle it, and you pick a hand of cards, and you keep playing. Mm-hmm. So incredibly elegant, incredibly low barrier.
Yep.
For entry.
Because it's another entry game, like gateway game for a lot of people.
It's easy enough to understand. Like if you're a first time gamer, the mechanism feels exciting and new. Mm-hmm. And it's quite self-explanatory because it explains literally what you can do with a card. And it's printed there.
I think we have Dominion to thank for one of our gateway games, which was Hogwarts Battle.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Any type of, I think, deck builder type games. Probably it popularized that.
Well, and that I
type
think
of game.
It still has that same like Catan effect. Like they're still creating new expansions for Dominion. People have everything you can own. I've seen these like amazing boxes, like big wooden craft boxes that hold their entire collections. It's still one of those games that it may not be the only game that that person plays, but you know, it could be one of them. Like mm-hmm. they don't need to play mm-hmm. much more with all the expansions and everything.
Yeah.
That people just keep coming back to. Plus, I feel like of all the kind of mechanisms at the heart, like just base mechanisms at the heart of the current hobby, deck building, arguably also worker placement, but the two of those seem to be the most iterated upon. But I think the first worker placement game was either Bus or Kalis. They were both pretty early, but it's not clear, right, which exactly the first worker placement game was. And I don't think they had quite the same impact on the, not like the hobby in general, and I think worldwide.
Yeah, those are pretty, mm-hmm. I think, like compared to Catan, pretty niche games.
Yeah, like in the hobby, you could say Agricola.
Yeah.
But again, that's a very niche hobby game.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas you have a chance of anyone in the wide world having heard of Dominion or bringing them into the hobby with Dominion.
That's fair.
The average Jill and Joe on the street.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I agree. So far, I'm like, oh, yeah.
So far.
You sound like, even though you did minimal research, I'm like, this is coming from the heart and it all makes really good sense.
I literally came up with this episode while I was driving across the city.
No.
I was putting these games into my notes app at red light so I wouldn't forget them.
Wow. I don't think I spend my spare time thinking about board games as much as you do.
I don't know. It just clicked for me. Rarely do episodes.
So this is a third game, right?
That was a third. Dominion was the third.
Dominion was the third game.
Okay. So the next one I think will come as no surprise. And this one I debated a lot. But my fourth game, and I think I settled on the right one, is Pandemic.
Yeah.
Because again, if we weren't so excited about recording this, I would have gone and done research. I imagine there were co-op games before Pandemic. I'm sure there were. But I don't, like, Pandemic was the first one that just blew up the co-op gaming sphere. Like all of a sudden, it's just this whole like board games. You think board games and you think, oh, like Monopoly, oh, you're competing against people. One person's going to win. And then all of a sudden you have this completely unique idea of like, well, no, we're all working together for a common goal. And I know it sounds super like there's so many co-op games now, but I feel like when it came out, that was like to gamers and non-gamers alike, that was just such a big, just so different.
Well, it has a table presence too. If you see someone playing this in a board game cafe, and I remember actually back when Snakes and Lattes was a new board game cafe, I saw someone playing a Pandemic. And I was like, oh, what are they playing? It looks so cool. What is it? So fair. So Pandemic is influential in the sense that it's a popularized cooperative game.
Well, and again, we are weird. But we, again, I imagine have Pandemic to thank for another one of our like gateway games, which was Dead Men Tell No Tales. Also, like a lot of the co-op games, even the ones that are still coming out today, people will describe them as, oh, it's a Pandemic style co-op. Like you do the thing, you're mitigating damage, something happens, everything spills out. And I think that unique deck mechanism with Pandemic where you take at some point, like in Pandemic, an epidemic's going to happen, blah, 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 and you have to shuffle the cities that you already flipped back in and put them back on the top of the deck. Like right. That was just this, like just such a little tiny thing, but A, it makes so much thematic sense, and B, it just worked so well. And I mean, there's so many games, literally Pandemic games of like, there's a Star Wars one now, there's like Iberia, there's continue. I mean, so many expansions, like there's a gajillion games plus so many other co-op games of that style.
Well, I think Pandemic has two influential moments in recent history of modern board gaming. The first one was around the time when it first came out and had a table presence. It looks cool. It actually looked kind of intense for entry-level gamers, but it looks intense, but as far as complexity goes, it's a 2.4-ish. It's not something that's too hard. So it feels cool to be playing something that looks intense. But not only that, if you're not sure about board games, as long as you have one really gung-ho friend.
Yes.
Then you're like, oh, okay, we're not competing against each other. Okay, if we lose together. Great. I'm willing to try. Because I think a lot of that barrier for people going into the hobby is just feeling, well, I don't want to feel stupid, or, well, mm-hmm. I don't really know. I want someone to hold my hand a little bit more to figure out how to play certain things and how to be quote unquote strategic.
Well, and I think it gets rid of that barrier of having to learn rules. Because right. As long as you have one person, it's very easy. If one person knows the game, you can just learn how to play while you're playing it. You don't have to sit through 10 or 15 minutes of rules beforehand.
Right. So I think that was one of the most influential points was when it, around the time when it came out, that was also kind of around the time when board game cafes plus like 2 or 3 years when board game cafes really exploded. I'm really mainly talking about North America here because I know Snakes and Lattes opened in 2010, right? Around 2010, Pandemic came out in around 2008. So I can see those two things with the explosion of board game cafes. You can now be exposed to thousands of games without having to purchase thousands of games. And you get to play with your friends together.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
It looks like a pretty intense and cool game. I think those are all, you know, the stars align. So that's the first impact point. The second impact point, I think, is when COVID started.
I think the second impact point would be Pandemic Legacy.
Okay.
Like, fair. Okay. So
may I finish my points first?
If I say no, you're going to forget them. So sure.
Yes. Okay. So I think, well, that's not fair. Like Pandemic Legacy is technically a different game. But anyways, I think I think the second impact point is during COVID, when people were now hunkering down and they were looking for an inside activity to play, I think because we were in the midst of pandemic, a lot of people felt like, well, might as well buy this pandemic game and give it a try. So I felt like that was another sort of the gold rush moment of modern board gaming that had an injection of new interest.
Granted, I feel like a lot of people turned away from Pandemic when COVID started too. Because they're like, oh really? This just feels too real.
Oh.
But I will also say, like, quickly, okay, I thought about putting my initial thought when I thought of Pandemic was like, oh, Pandemic Legacy Season 1, that like kicked off the Legacy thing. It was not the first Legacy game. Mm. I'm pretty sure Risk Legacy was the first Legacy game. Mm. And maybe Risk should have been on this list, but but I feel like Pandemic Legacy made Legacy games popular. And without Pandemic Legacy, I don't know that we'd have had this huge outpouring of Legacy games that we've had.
Yeah.
Are there too many of them? Who can say? Maybe. Probably. But it, you know, it's a cool, what's the word? Like fad that's been going in the gaming sphere. And I think that's cool.
Yeah.
And I feel like Pandemic Legacy kicked that off. Popularized it.
I think Legacy game-wise, if we're really looking at that category or niche, it really has impacted the people that are already in the know.
Oh, very true. That's
right.
True.
Like, yeah. I don't know. As far as reach goes, I don't think this is one of those, like, influential in the sense of pulling people
absolutely
in. But I do remember when I was a pretty, like, a budding board game enthusiasts that the idea of a legacy game
I remember
was really, really
when
cool.
We were at Cards, the board game cafe in Grand Prairie, the people working there that owned it telling us about Pandemic Legacy, like, all because it just come out the first season. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, this game just, oh, it's so cool, you actually cut cards, and we're like, what? Like, yeah,
it was, yeah,
but still, I think so. Pandemic has done a lot, but definitely, yeah, on the grand scheme, it's one of those games that you may see at someone's house that just, you know, otherwise has Monopoly and Sorry and those, like the old standards, which is pretty cool. And big hurrah for co-op games as well. Okay, now, arguably, this is going to be the most divisive game on my list. Ironically, it was also the first game I thought of. This is the game that made me think of this episode topic. Oh. And that is Wingspan.
Gotta explain this.
Okay. So, again, if I'd been able to do more research, this might be wrong, and you can tell me I'm wrong, but I feel like Wingspan was one of the first games that, I mean, A, it came out and it just went crazy. I mean, especially like in the gaming hobby, but even outside of the gaming hobby, again, not quite as much as Pandemic or some of the others, but it's one of those games that people might pick up just based on theme alone. And on top of that, I think it started or popularized the idea of creating pretty games. In my mind, nature-themed games, like topics or themes that are going to appeal to a wider range of people. I feel like a lot of people would have been turned off from gaming before that because, like, well, I don't really care about fantasy. Like, I don't want to go through a dungeon and deal with orcs and things like that. Or like, okay, there's lots of like trading in the Mediterranean, like just, you know, the quote unquote dry Euros. They're not thematically going to draw many, if any, people outside of the gaming sphere in. But birds, absolutely. And I feel like since Wingspan, and again, this just might be that, you know, we weren't in the hobby in the early 20, like the teens. But I feel like since Wingspan came out, there's just been a huge explosion of beautiful nature-themed games.
It's funny you talk about nature because I'm following your thought process, but I feel like Wingspan is, you mentioned it, it's pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And I think pretty games captured a really unique, more feminine, pretty wanting people's attention. And I felt like it.
Yeah.
For me, I wouldn't say that it brought in this like nature theme. I think it brought in feminine energy into the gaming sphere because you can have things that look pretty and frilly and gorgeous and still be freaking strategic because people that like pretty things can still like strategic and complicated and complex games. Not to say that Wingspan is particularly complex or complicated, but I feel like a lot of the times when you think about gaming, you think about really like masculine, nerdy energy, like Magic the Gathering or war games or, you know, a lot of the drier Euros. It's just like, yeah, well, I think I want some color in things. And it added color. It added color to Euros. And it made things pretty. And I think that was just enough of a catalyst to attract the attention of a bunch of people that generally associate board games with a certain type of people or with a certain feel or certain themes.
Well, and I still think that I don't feel like there would have been a game, like a game themed around birds. Like that's just such a niche thing and seeming like, oh, you just feel like a theme like that is just going to fizzle. But no.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
It exploded and now you're getting all sorts of really niche-y themes that on games that become quite popular. None of which are coming to I'm thinking like
So I actually have a question for you.
Okay, perfect. Good, because I don't know where I was going with that sentence.
Because Wingspan came out 2018,
I think.
Oh, 2018? Because I was going to say, if I'm thinking about pretty games, I was like, why not Everdell?
Because Everdell has not hit the general population as much. Because remember when we were at Target when we were in the States?
Right.
Wingspan was on the shelves at Target.
Oh.
Everdell was not. Because Everdell is that extra step up in complexity.
Right.
That is not, and I don't think it's going to draw, like, it's very cute, it's very pretty.
Yeah, it really is.
But it's not going to draw, and I still think, like, that just that pure nature of, like, real birds in real life, but with beautiful, beautiful Beth Sobel hand-drawn art, is going, that theme is going to draw more people in than anthropomorphized animals.
Okay, fair.
And yeah, Wingspan has just had such a huge impact on the market. Like, I don't know. They've just sold so many, and especially for it being like Elizabeth Hargrave's first game. That's crazy. But outside of that, again, like our friends that are kind of getting into the board gaming hobby.
That's fair. That's
they
true.
Just picked up Wingspan.
Yeah.
I'm on a couple of bird groups on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I've heard people who have no idea about board game, like very new to the hobby, not even in the hobby, being like, oh, hey, I heard there's this board game called Wingspan about birds. Like, does anyone know anything about this? So again, I feel like it's another one of those games that's just impacted not just the hobby, but, you know, the wider population as well.
So do you think Wingspan's influence, its footprint kind of extended to like special interest themed board games, like, you know, Interstellar and like not space in the pew pew space, but like space in the pretty stars and stargazing.
I think so.
Parks where you're trekking and hiking and.
Yeah, maybe. Mm. I can't remember when Parks came out.
Yeah.
But like, I don't think we would have Genotype without Wingspan.
Mm.
Like a game about Mendelian genetics. Maybe we would. Maybe I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like Wingspan made it more likely for a publisher to take a chance on something like that. There's lots of sciencey themed games now.
Yeah.
I feel like it just made it more likely for these niche and bird, like in the world, like birding, there's lots of people that bird. It is a popular hobby and it got more popular during COVID.
Mm.
Although Wingspan came out before, but still. But it seemed like a niche hobby outside of that.
Yeah.
But I feel like with the success of Wingspan, it's making publishers, you know, more readily take a chance on something that seems kind of niche-y.
Right.
Again, I could be completely wrong. I did not do research on what games came out when, but just coming into the hobby around like the mid-teens, 20-teens, these are the ones that just stand out to me as having that huge impact. Like, we were in the hobby when Wingspan came out.
Yeah.
I remember the craze.
I remember it was so, like, again, like, mind-blowing in the most calming way. I'm like, the board's so pretty. Oh, this is a journal when you fold it up. And, oh, look at this card. Look how pretty the bird is. And then you have a little nature facts about the birds.
And it adds on that, like, that beautiful Stonemaier production.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would argue, like you said, it, like, made it popular, like, okay, for games to be pretty.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue that, well, Scythe was pretty.
Yeah, but Scythe is pretty, but Scythe is like masculine pretty, right? Like, it's, again, it's pew-pew pretty. It's not
a different vibe.
It's pretty. A totally different vibe. Not to say like feminine people can't enjoy masculine things, but it's just like something that, for me, it's so femininely beautiful. And I think, like, for me, I think it opened up. It made it much more welcoming.
Because it's a competitive game, but it's, there's no reference to war. There's no fighting. There's no, it's just, oh, let's just come here. And we're just going to build a little bird sanctuary for the next 45 minutes to an hour.
It's beautiful.
And yeah, like, sure, there's one person's going to win, but it's not like someone has to lose at the expense of that person winning.
Yeah. You're all just building a bird sanctuary, and it's just nice. There's so little strife in the game for if you're losing.
Except for, right? Those unfortunate, it's not, roles in the bird feeder.
It's not like you're losing it because you got decimated by your opponent because took over your land and took away all your resources, or no one would trade wood with you. It's just nice.
Well, in the thematic ties, like, and that little bit of flavor text on the bottom of the cards, like just a little fact about each bird and how the type of bird matches what its power is.
Now, I was surprised, but maybe not out of those top five, or maybe these are more honorable mentions, but I was surprised you didn't mention escape room games. Like, would you consider that as a board game?
Yeah, but I feel like in the hobby, for sure, they've had this huge impact, and without, like, outside of the hobby to some extent as well.
Yeah.
But,
because I certainly know that, you know, people that like escape rooms that are not in the hobby.
That's true.
That captures their attention. But it's something that's sure cool and they want to bring it in.
That's going to bring them into the hobby as much. Some of these other games.
That's fair. Yeah.
I guess the other omission
it's
is
pretty insulated.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I didn't have like Werewolf on here. There's no social deduction games on here because that's another style of game that a lot of people will play. But it just, to me, a lot of like people in the hobby, you like social deduction games or you hate them.
Right.
I don't know. It just didn't feel quite as all encompassing as these games did.
Right. Well, and then I was also, I don't think, I'm surprised. I think your logic is really, really sound. But I was surprised that, you know, your typical gateway games like Splendor or Ticket to Ride or
Ticket to Azul. Ticket to Ride, I think, would be the other big omission.
Yeah.
But I don't know. And here's the thing. I didn't think a Ticket to Ride.
Because we don't like it all that much.
I don't think Ticket to Ride had as big of an impact in the gaming sphere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sure, a lot of gamers like it, and it's a lot of people's gateway game. But for people that were already in the hobby at the time, people didn't go crazy for Ticket to Ride. But you're right. And Splendor, like, it's a solid game.
I think these are okay staying as like the honorable mentions, because you're right. If we're looking at it in a pretty sort of wide lens, these were games that really sort of pulled people in as they got into the hobby. But I wouldn't say that they had that impact and influence over, well, like the primordial games like Magic and Catan. They created the financial resources to fund.
Yeah.
Board game stores so that they could continue selling games.
And yeah, Ticket to Ride might be the next decade's Catan. Like, it's pretty popular. Like, in the sense of its popularity.
Okay.
Right? Like, there's a lot, again, like I said, a lot of people that only have Monopoly and Sorry. Okay, they've heard of Catan and Ticket to Ride.
Okay, fair.
But it came out so much later than Catan. I don't think it had that same impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The hobby is a sphere. Excellent questions, though.
Yeah.
Especially asking me about games I hadn't thought of.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
You're welcome. We're together because I challenge you every day, right?
I'm glad I could defend my position.
But yeah, no, that was a cool discussion. I really like that.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious if there are other blind spots that we missed. Like, are there, you know, any of these mentions, did it shock you? Did it give you strong feelings around how wrong we were?
I imagine that of all of our episodes so far, this one is probably the one most rife for arguments.
Oh, I love arguments. And you know how you can argue with us? You could argue with us over at RBGG Guild, over Discord, give us a shout over Instagram, even though we really don't update it as
often. We need to be better, but we will. We do see messages and comments.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, but you know, an even better way to let us know your strong opinions is giving us a review and a rating. And you know what? We'll give you a shout out if you do.
Yeah. And you know what? For this episode only, I will accept 1-star reviews telling me how wrong I am about influential games, provided you provide your 5 most influential games list.
Mm, that's fair. And the rationale.
And the rationale. Mm-hmm. Not just that I'm stupid.
Yeah.
Because that may or may not be true. But you need more rationale than that.
And you know what? We're lazy. So do the fact checking with us. Tell us if we're wrong.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We will eat humble pie again and acknowledge the errors in our ways.
As
in our
we next said, podcast. We're just here to be the most mediocre podcast.
That's right. That's the where best. We're striving. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. Welcome to Mediocre Land. And while you're at it, happy gaming
and stay gancy.